It's an interesting exercise to sort of step back in time and understand the context in which.
You are not loud enough.
I was saying it's interesting to sort of take a step back in time and understand the context in which this ergodic hypothesis was first thought about in quantum mechanics. So it was actually, people started wondering about the ergodic hypothesis right at the inception of the ideas of quantum mechanics. So this is a paper by von Neumann in 1929, which is in German, and it was only recently translated into English, which was trying to sort of grapple with the idea of ergodic systems in a quantum setting. So he was interested in reformulating ergodicity for quantum system when the microscopic degrees of freedom have this inherent discreteness, which is lacking in classical systems, and how a time reversal symmetric microscopic equations of motion spontaneously generate the arrow of time. It is still in some sense an open problem in classical system for a generic interacting quantum classical system if it is ergodic in the sense that it explores all of phase space, while in the quantum setting it is also still a very much an open question if it's still a hypothesis. There's no ergodic theorem for sort of genetic physical Hamiltonians. I sort of found it useful to sort of also sort of this commentary by Goldstein and Leibovitz, where they contextualize this paper from a more modern point of view and how it's relevant for the issues of thermalization that we have become again interested in. Fast forward 30 years, and there's this famous paper by Anderson, which was referred to in the earlier talk, and he was also interested in the issue of thermalization and whether an isolated quantum system in the absence of coupling to a heat bath can thermalize. So the essential ingredient he added was this notion of disorder, and he's conjectured that there may be a phase or a regime of parameters where even interacting quantum systems fail to be ergodic, and that is one of the definitions of many-body localization. So a system freezes when, if you start off with some initial conditions, a system freezes and retains memory of its initial conditions even at long times. So one can see that this question of ergodicity and localization in some sense has to be treated on an equal footing, and it has sort of troubled many sort of thinkers of quantum mechanics right from when we understood the mathematical structure of these theories. And to date, I don't think ergodicity has been strictly proven, that's why it's called a hypothesis, in any realistic quantum and classical system. And you may correct me if I'm wrong, but I have at least not come across any proof, while we'll hear of a proof of many-body localization. So it makes me wonder sometimes that lack of ergodicity may actually be a more generic phenomena than equilibrium. if we take dynamics more seriously. It's just that equilibrium physics is much more easy to think conceptually, and there'll be more cases where the system doesn't equilibrate. So their sort of recent excitement is largely because of experiments, because experiments can give us a sort of bleak preview into what could be the mechanisms which allow a system to be ergodic and allow a system to be ergodic, or the conditions in which the system fails to equilibrate. So now we have control over interactions in disorder, and one can study dynamics and this approach to the ergodic state much more carefully in the future, and understand this question in the quantum realm in more detail. So it can give us indications about what to consider more seriously in our theoretical framework to describe if a generic system reaches an equilibrium state. So these are cold atom systems. There are also solid state systems where one can have very strong control, very high fidelity control of local degrees of freedom, which are highly isolated. So high degree of isolation has become a sort of goal that experimentalists are trying to achieve for quantum information purposes. So it has automatically led to questions about thermalization, about decoherence, and understanding quantum dynamics, dynamics of entanglement, in a much more detailed fashion for the progress. So with that introduction, let me start off with single particle localization, a heuristic picture of localization in the case of non-interacting particles, which may be useful to keep in mind while I discuss the many-body problem. So this is a non-interacting Hamiltonian, and there is disorder, there's an on-site disorder which has a sort of uniform distribution between minus W and W, and there is a hopping term. And as a starting point for the perturbation theory, we can turn off the tunneling. So this is sort of a cartoon picture of the disorder potential, and the tunneling produces hops between adjacent states, nearest neighbor states. On turning on tunneling, the hops actually perturbatively couple these localized states to adjacent levels. And the statement of localization essentially means that if the disorder is large enough, then the tunneling is never the sort of resonance with the adjacent state is suppressed by T over W. So, and if you have large enough disorder, then neighboring hops is not able to sort of proliferate this resonance, and they are suppressed at higher orders as well. So that's a very heuristic picture, and one has to be more careful about these statements about statistical convergence of this perturbation theory, or worst case, those are subtleties, but the basic idea is if you have disorder, large disorder, then adjacent site will have a random energy which is far away, and the tunneling is just not able to mix those states strongly enough. And delocalization is essentially marked by proliferation of these hops as the tunneling gets stronger. In the many-body problem, was again brought back to our attention by this work by Baskerville and Al-Schuler, where they assumed weakly interacting fermions in d dimensions in the presence of quench disorder. And there was no coupling to an external heat bath. And what they were able to show that perturbatively, single particle localization remains stable for finite interaction strengths up to extensive energy density. So they start off with all the single particle states being localized, and where the conductivity is strictly equal to zero in the absence of interactions. And they perturbatively showed that the DC conductivity up to a finite temperature is strictly equal to zero, above which it becomes finite. So this axis, you should more appropriate to think of it as energy density, where in the conducting phase, a temperature is not a well-defined quantity. And as you go to higher energy densities and the conductivity is finite, then it's fair to talk about a temperature. So during the course of the talk, I may sort of use temperature and energy density interchangeably. And but whenever I'm in the insulating phase, I would not strictly talk mean temperature. Yeah. But I want to be if I create an initial state which doesn't have a well defined, it has a highly heterogeneous energy distribution. I mean, density may vary. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's. I mean, you can. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. No. I mean. Yeah. I mean. What? I mean. Depends. What are you actually? Yeah. Measuring. I mean, you could. Temperature is being generated dynamically. That's what I would. Yeah, as an initial condition, you can put it in, but if one starts with an initial condition where the temperature is not well defined, does that sort of emerge as a function of time? So there are no thermodynamic signatures across this transition. There are only dynamical signatures. So if you look at susceptibilities, there'll be no divergences, but only in the dynamic quantities. So let me sort of give a general line of reasoning, what BA assumes. So all single particle states are localized. So they're within some localization volume, you can assume the interaction is short-ranged. So you can expand the interaction in terms of these single particle localized orbitals. And the interaction just produces Hobbes between states within this volume. These states, you can create your many-body states as a sort of product of these single-particle localized states, direct product, and the interaction essentially produces Hobbes. Back up here. So the basis states will represent in this many-body Hilbert space, each point in this Fock space is a product of these single-particle states. So there's the interaction essentially is, each point, this is a sort of four particle hypercube, so to say. So you have 1, 1, 1, 1 means there are four electrons in the four orbitals which are occupied. And the interaction essentially produce hops along this hypercube, and depending on what the form of the interaction is, here it's sort of, it's like annihilating an apart. So, okay, this hypercube is for a spin model, which is a different model from here, but the idea is the interaction term essentially produces Hobbes on the hypercube. And many body localization in that sense can be thought, according to these authors, as a localization on this hypercube and on a high dimensional hypercube. And I would be sort of coming back to this picture again later in my talk. So many speakers have already explained this idea of eigenstate thermalization. I will not repeat that, but the idea is that individual eigenstates of the entire system mimic local thermal equilibrium if the system thermalizes. So that it sort of gives rise to an extreme limit of the microcanonical ensemble, where a single eigenstate can serve as your thermodynamic ensemble for the purposes of calculating thermodynamic quantities. So the infinite temperature transition, so the transition proposed by Bascule and Al-Schuler was a finite, finite temperature transition. But in numerics, the infinite temperature transition has been observed in 1D models where you have finite bandwidth with bounded disorder. So this is a 1D Heisenberg chain with local magnetic fields. And one can see what is plotted here is something we define to be the dynamic, to be the spin polarization. So you put a spin polarization on top of one of those eigenstates and ask at long times how much of this spin polarization decays to zero. In the thermal phase, this long wavelength spin polarization will entirely decay to zero. So what is plotted here is a quantity which is the dynamic fraction, what fraction of the initial polarization decays, and at low disorder where we expect the system to be ergodic, this fraction, as a function of increasing system size, strongly goes to one. While at large disorder, this fraction is tending to zero, saying that this long wavelength spin modulation is not able to relax. But this all these numerics have been done in the infinite temperature case, trying to study states in the middle of the band. One of the motivations for our work is to actually provide evidence and try to probe the transition, not just as a function of disorder strength, but as a function of energy density. Are there interesting effects that can come about if you go to, instead of being at infinite temperature, some finite energy density, and tune this phase transition as a function of energy density?
And you expect the transition to be different at finite energy density compared to the transition that you see as a function of disorder?
That's a good question. So let me say in one way, conceptually it may be different. So the fully many-body localized system has these conservation laws which we heard about. Now, once you have a many-body mobility edge, these conservation laws, it's not clear what happens. So you may create a state at an energy density which is at a low enough temperature. These conservation laws are operators whose commutator with the Hamiltonian sort of is small. That's why they are conservation laws. But you could imagine creating a state in a highly excited, which is at an energy density above the mobility edge. What happens to these conservation laws? I mean, the Hamiltonian still has small commutators with these operators because they're strictly speaking conservation laws. But if they don't relax, if there are these finite number of conservation laws which don't relax in an initial state which is at a higher energy, it's not clear. So there may be the transition, the infinite temperature transition may be in interesting ways different from the case where there's a mobility edge. I mean, it's not clear at the moment to me, but I'm just keeping the possibility open that they have different properties. So this calculation was done at infinite temperature. So you can sort of take the uniform weight initial state, and then put a spin modulation, which is some small perturbation on top of that, and ask how much does it relax. So if this fraction goes to, so now that's the sort of thought experiment that one does. The actual quantity which is calculated is this fraction, which is a difference of the, so this is the infinite time magnetic polarization that is left in the, due to contribution of the nth eigenstate to the infinite time polarization. So you put a density, I can write down maybe to clarify. So you take a density matrix, which is one for infinite temperature state, and then perturb it by M1 dagger. And you evolve this in time, and the inverse, and you calculate rho of t, and you measure M1 and take a trace. This is the polarization as a function of time. There's an infinite time limit where the off-diagonal parts will cancel out, and there is a zero time limit where there is no off-diagonal term. So each eigenstate contributes in some way at zero time, which is the denominator, and the numerator is a difference of the zero time minus the infinite time. So it's the contribution of the polarization from an eigenstate n to this entire summation. And then you average over all the eigenstates. So that's why it's this fraction goes to zero, one. All the initial polarization decays to zero. So that's one of the motivations to study the many-body mobility edge. And also, there is no mean field theory for the transition. So in the single particle problem, there was this famous work by Abu Chakra, Anderson, and Thouless, where they essentially studied the single particle problem on a Bethe lattice, and it provides some properties of this transition. So you don't have loops in this on this lattice. It's artificial in that sense, as opposed to finite dimensional problem. The volume, as you in number of steps, the number of sites which are enclosed within a certain number of steps grows as a high volume growth. It grows exponentially, which is different from finite dimensional. But some of the features of the transition can be captured in a controllable way using the self-consistent theory. So if there are phase transitions, a mean field sort of this understanding may give some hint as to what are the relevant parameters to be taken into account. It may not get all the details of the transition, but a mean field understanding will be useful in some sense. So is there an analogous description of the many-body problem? So with that sort of motivation in mind, trying to study the many-body mobility edge, and is there a mean field model which has a similar transition, which captures some of the properties of this interesting phase transition? So mean field, is there a mean field model? Where should we look? What kind of mean field models should we look at? So one place to start is the spin models which have spin glass transitions. So spin glasses, they have ergodicity breaking transitions in the sense, but they're still coupled, they are equilibrium phase transitions. They are not quite dynamic phase transitions, but they have sort of this lack of ergodicity in some sense as a feature in these transitions, because it's dynamically, there's a freezing transition in this phase space. So with that motivation in mind, we looked at the quantum version of the simplest spin mean field model for spin glass. It's known as the random energy model. There is a random energy term, which is essentially, so again, I'll go back to the hypercube. So you have a configuration of spins, and each configuration of spins, you assign a random energy. So that's the random energy model. This is just classical. So you can think of it. There's a limit in which you can think of. It can be thought of as P goes. So there are P. There's an Ising spin interaction. These are a string of P Ising spins, which are interacting with each other with some random coefficient from probability distribution. And this random energy model, where each site on this hypercube has a random energy, which is chosen from this probability distribution, can be thought of as a P going to infinity limit of this P-body Ising interaction. So as many mean field models, this is highly, it's a non-local, long-range model, and the localization here sort of makes sense. I'll talk about, there is in some sense, this model is still has some local properties, but in terms of correlation functions, this model doesn't capture those features. It's a localization, strictly a localization on the hypercube, which was sort of the picture BAA was thinking about. So this model is interesting, mean field model, and this transverse field producer, as I said, produces hops along the edges of the hypercube, and that's what gives rise to the quantum dynamics. Now we want to ask, is there a many-body mobility edge in this model? And to understand the dynamical phase diagram of this mean field model. Okay, mean field in the sense. I'm not approximating. This is not a non-interacting model. This is a highly interacting model. So it's usually we have this picture of the mean field model is true in the case where the connectivity becomes infinite. In some sense.
So there are 2 to the n energy levels.
Yeah.
And from any given energy, which are a Gaussian distribution.
Yeah.
And from any given energy level, I can hop to a fraction n of them. Is that correct? Or I can only hop from one energy level to some small fraction of the
value. Yeah. So small. Depends depends on what energy you are at. So if you are at an extensive energy, this distribution function is like most of the states are in the middle of the distribution function. So any typical hops will essentially take you to the middle of the, that's the sort of, so the feature of this model, which is.
Oh, I see. The energy becomes narrower or broader as n goes to infinity.
Yeah, there was just one comment I wanted to make. So this is mean field in the same sense in which Shannon took part.
Yeah.
Even more. It's B spin and large B. So in the original work by Derrida, the idea was that he wanted to since this is exactly solvable, the classical counterpart is exactly solvable.
Yeah, that's the next.
He wanted to check.
And then
the other thing is that you mean hopping is the sigma x.
Right, but let me just forget about space.
So any level can hop on any
exactly what I said.
Yeah, okay, in that sense.
Each one has
connectivity. Yeah, so that's.
So there is some random fraction, and then how do you know?
Sigma x.
It's one spin.
But how do you follow the answer? How do you
implement? No, this is not random. Every level is connected to
any other levels. Yeah, that's it.
You don't suppress any.
So where they are, the Hamming distance is one.
Over there, okay.
So you flip a spin. There are n states within a Hamming distance 1 of any basis state.
Right, so there is a kind of connectivity.
So Abu Chakra Thaulis Anderson, they studied connectivity, finite connectivity. Bethe lattice has finite connectivity. While this hypercube, the connectivity actually diverges. That's one of the problems on the many body problem. That you have this high connectivity, when you go to the infinite system size, you can hop, you have many more hops on the hypercube. How do you know that you stay localized? That is one of the sort of, in this model, we sort of, this random energy part sort of helps us to sort of control the hops that you have. In a real physical system, the randomness in the real space is not, it brings about a lot of correlations that we don't know. The different paths on this hypercube will have lots of correlations if you think of the mapping from a real space problem to the hypercube. So that really makes the many-body problem challenging. While we are sort of throwing away some aspect of it by making it completely random on the hypercube.
It looks like on the hypercube you have like nearest neighbors popping on the hypercube. So in some sense, it looks very similar to Anderson's model, just on the hypercube.
Yeah, but the,
it's not just like a picture of the Bascual-Navier. Here it's actually exact.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Just the connectivity of the hypercube diverges.
As
in the infinite
system. So basically, you have like Anderson localization at n dimensions.
Yeah, high dimensional Anderson localization is also, it's, I don't know, it's a challenge. I mean, it seems there is there are questions, open questions there.
It's a very peculiar thing. The number of sides is 2 to the power of n.
Yeah.
The connectivity is n.
Yeah.
In some sense, connectivity is still small.
You don't connect to all the states. Yes, you don't connect to all the states, right?
Which is a, this is beyond the feature of this thing that is shared by essentially any main body. Right? And then if you really have a local Hamiltonian, then the energies, the neighboring energies are very correlated. Here they are completely random. So that's the only approximation. But the structure of the hypercube, that's
any more questions? So yeah, so the thermodynamic phase diagram at gamma is equal to zero was sort of understood by Derrida in 1981, long time ago. And the essential one can understand this phase diagram by a very simple argument. This is the probability distribution of energy. You can calculate the number of states between E and E plus delta E. So that gives you an entropy function, so entropy density function. So now this epsilon is energy density, and in the microcanonical picture, this is the entropy function. And it turns out that if you have energy sort of above a certain value, then here zero of the energy is in the middle of the band. So E is equal to zero is here, while the ground state is some extensive energy away from the center of the band. Above a certain epsilon naught, there are with exponentially small probability there are no states there. So while the number of states as you go above where epsilon is below a certain value, which is epsilon naught, you have a exponentially large number of states. So this is sort of the, and this state where there are a large number of states contributing, that's the paramagnetic state. While at epsilon and energies below this, there are order one number of states contributing. So this was a very toy model, an extremely simplistic toy model of the classical spin glass in this infinite connectivity limit. And you can turn that these energies into a canonical temperature, and there's a paramagnetic phase where the free energy is given by this, and the glassy phase where the free energy is something of order one, and there's a phase transition, between the two at some.
The entropy in the glassy phase is zero.
Yeah. Model that's this is I mean
zero. You can actually look also at the fraction of states which is occupied. This is that could be a calculation. It's not in Derrida, but it's in the book by
Mizard Montanari. Yeah, the fluctuations, not just the number of states become order one, the fluctuations of the number of states also remain small. So that's one of the features. Now you can turn on gamma, the transverse field, and ask, what is the quantum, the phase thermodynamics, still a thermodynamic phase diagram, of this quantum problem? And that was shown using replica techniques by trotterizing the transverse field, that there are three phases. They're all first order transitions. There is a classical, so the classical glass stays stable up to finite gamma. The classical paramagnet stays stable up to finite gamma. And both of them at strong enough gamma, they essentially turn into a quantum paramagnet. There's a first order transition, And this is just a replica calculation. There was a calculation, a perturbative calculation, sort of probing this at gamma, at finite gamma, and they also got the same answer, which was sort of much later. So now we want to ask if you take the quantum dynamics of this system, of this Hamiltonian, seriously, how does that change? What features does it add to this phase diagram? Now, so this is the dynamical phase diagram, which we propose as a function of gamma and as a function of temperature. So it turns out that there is, within the classical paramagnet, there is a phase transition between the localized and the ergodic phase. And I will show you how we measure these phase transitions. By now, there are sort of standard measures of this dynamical transition that we use to probe the transition. I'll show you evidence of that. I'll show you some analytic perturbative arguments which seem to be consistent with this result. And so this whole phase, this quantum paramagnet, is ergodic, while this classical glass is many-body localized. And also the classical paramagnet, part of the classical paramagnet, is many-body localized. And this is a canonical diagram. This is a microcanonical. So if we sort of bin states according to energy and ask about dynamic properties of the eigenstates motivated by eigenstate thermalization, one can map out the sort of transition line in energy by looking at these measures. And those are the blue dots. And the straight line is an analytical estimate of the transition that we have from perturbative calculations.
What happens
at infinite temperature? So, good question. The infinite temperature in this model, we don't think there is a many-body localization. And one could think, I mean, there's really long-range interactions. It's not clear that the many-body localized phase will survive. So in this model, we don't believe that there is an infinite temperature many-body localized.
The dashed line goes to a...
The dashed line is just the ground state. The dashed line. Oh, this dash line. This dashed line.
1 over gamma.
1 over gamma. And then, so the paramagnet is delocalized. So the argument whether deep in the paramagnet the system is ergodic goes as follows. So the paramagnetic spectrum, if there's no random energy, is a highly degenerate spectrum. I mean, they're random configurations of spins, and they can have these n levels, which are highly degenerate, 2 to the power n states distributed among n levels in a binomial distribution. But this random energy in each manifold of states acts as a random matrix. And that random matrix essentially generates GOE ensemble within each of these sort of bands of states of the paramagnet. So the quantum paramagnet, that's why we feel, is ergodic, but we actually don't have sort of the numerics become, because the number of states really goes down really significantly as we go to the edge of the bands, it's difficult to sort of numerically show that in a sort of, the error bars will become large. I mean, so it's a sort of a difficult regime to do numerics. We can say close to this infinite temperature, because there are a lot of states close to this infinite temperature, what happens. So that's why these dots are there, sort of clumped up there. So yeah, so this model, though it's sort of highly non-local, long range, has an observable which behaves somewhat locally. So if you take the commutator of sigma iz, say that commutator is of order 1. While if you take the commutator of sigma ix, that commutator is of order n, because of as I was arguing that this term is this highly non-local interaction. So the local izing part of the spin, the z component of the spin, is in some sense still a local observable. So this is in this mean field picture. You have a single spin, and you can ask whether that spin relaxes at infinite time. There's no long wavelet relaxation, as I was talking earlier, but there is a notion of relaxation of a single site observable. And according to ETH, even a single spin should thermalize if the system is ergodic. So we use this measure. And in the ergodic phase, if you calculate the single spin in an eigenstate n and calculate the difference between two adjacent eigenstates, del n by del m by del n, then this difference goes down exponentially because two adjacent eigenstates are thermal and represent the same temperature. So in the thermodynamic, and they're exponentially close in energy for a many-body system, they would represent the same temperature. So they should give the thermal value. So this quantity should go to zero exponentially, this difference in two adjacent eigenstates. While in the localized phase, this stays of order one. So let's see what the numerics say, tell us. So this is for a particular value of gamma, which I forget. At low, and this is as a function of energy density. So this is the top plot is a distribution function of this quantity, delta Mn. Okay. There is a distribution function of the difference of the magnetization between two adjacent eigenstates. So at low energy density, this distribution function develops a peak at minus one and plus one, which is saying that two adjacent eigenstates look very different from each other in terms of this local observable. And that is a measure of localization. The adjacent eigenstates are becoming athermal. While if you go to the middle of the band, this distribution has a strong peak at zero. So this strong peak is saying that two adjacent eigenstates give the same value of the local magnetization. And we have a sort of an order parameter, in some sense, from this distribution function. You can calculate the variance of this distribution function. So the mean in this distribution function is zero of distribution of delta Mn. There are sort of equal weights at plus two and minus two. And here, the mean should go exponentially to zero. So this is what is plotted here, variance of this probability distribution as a function of energy density. So at low energy densities, this variance tends to 2, which is what we believe. Two adjacent eigenstates are very different from each other. And at states in the middle of the band, this variance sort of goes to 0 as a function of system size. So the different colored plots are different system sizes. And you can see very nicely that it agrees with the thermal expectation. It's like a local conservation. And there is some spread of the wave function. So it's. So there are these blurry lines here, which, I mean, it goes continuously from here to here. I mean, it's just that it doesn't, the color scheme, it doesn't show very clearly. There's a continuous sort of crossover from the, but deep in the localized phase, it's not. It's fully discrete. So the other signature is many-body level statistics. So one can look at this spectral measure. You take a difference between two adjacent eigenstates. This is the many-body level spacing. And look at two adjacent gaps. And these gaps, if they are if the level spacing is GOE level statistics, the mean R should go to 0.53. While if the in the MBL phase, if it has Poisson level statistics, it goes to 0.39. So here is at some finite gamma as a function of energy density for different system sizes, this spectral measure. This is 0.53, and this is the dotted line is 0.39. And you can see that in the middle of the spectrum, it converges to the thermal, the ergodic expectation value. While in the tails of the band, you get sort of localized states. Now, coming back to the question of infinite temperature, so this is a plot to sort of probe that question. So here is a plot. We have, take a bunch of states in the middle of the band and ask as a function of gamma, does that what if there is a transition, there will be at some finite gamma, there will be some crossing like this. But what we find is for different system sizes, as you increase the system size, it goes to the GOE value very quickly. There is no, within our numerical sort of precision, we are not able to see any such finite size crossover. And these lines are actually estimates, finite size estimates from a perturbative calculation of where this finite size crossover should be. And so from the two different methods, one is a replica method, one is sort of forward scattering approximation of the wave functions, and they predict that this transition actually at infinite system size, you have the localized state strictly at gamma is equal to zero. At any finite gamma for an infinite system size, you become ergodic. So now we can ask, what are the properties of the critical point in some sense, I mean numerically. So here what is plotted is the critical value of the level statistics. So the level statistics in the ergodic phase is 0.53. The level statistics measure of the level in the localized phase is 0.39. Now the question is, what is, if there is a critical point, what is the value of this level statistics measure at the critical point? So here you take states within some in a small window around zero, and tune gamma.
Okay, so you're catching the edge,
yeah.
Edge as a function of
gamma. Yeah. Now the infinite temperature. It's analog to the infinite temperature measures. Now I'm taking some. We are taking some states right here, and then tuning gamma.
But if you step away, you should expect a finite range of gamma. Or...
Yeah. That's what this. This plot is showing. If you go to some sort of large enough gamma, then you see this crossing.
No, I meant if it separates from zero energy density away, you also should see the crossing in the right plot, yeah. The crossing should be, the transition shouldn't be expected at zero, it should be expected somewhere further away.
No, but you take states a sub-extensive window of. You take states within a sub-extensive window. You don't, I mean,
you want
to average over, you don't want to go to average over a bunch of states which are at a different temperature. Yeah. So here the idea is to map out what this RC does as a function of energy density. So this is energy density, the critical, it's sort of mapping the critical line, so to say. This is at bottom of the band. So this is the center of the band at infinite temperature. And as you go to more, as you tune the energy density, the critical value of this level statistics measure seems to be changing continuously. So if we have this picture that there is some special distribution at the critical point which defines the level statistics, that distribution seems to be continuously changing. At least the mean of that, okay, we can't say the distribution, but at least the mean seems to be continuously changing with energy density, which is, it suggests that there is there may be, at least in this mean field model, I don't know, in a real physical system, if this holds up, but at this mean field level, there seems to be a variation of the critical behavior as a function of energy density.
I just wanted to point out that this is very different from what happens in a finite dimensional Anderson model. In fact, finite dimensional Newton model, if you look at the critical statistics at the center of the spectrum or somewhere else on the many on the mobility edge, you find the same critical statistics, which is supposed to be universal, the same critical properties. So here it seems that when you move with the energy density, you
are you changing the system? What you really should, if you look at different systems, I was going to see the step.
This is already trying to estimate this. Extrapolate. You calculate the critical value, critical point, by looking at the finite size scale.
Okay,
and then.
How are you varying the critical value?
Changing energy density.
Focusing on different parts of the spectrum.
Okay. All right.
So if you know if the extrapolation is correct, those are.
Maybe
it's a
finite size.
Continuously varying exponents. You know, it's aligned with continuously varying exponents.
No, that's what we are suggesting. We don't have a clear understanding, analytical understanding, why that should be true. But that's what, at least the numerics, at least.
So maybe you're going to get to that, but can you find this condition by a rapid symmetry variation
or something? So this is, the dynamic is difficult.
No, because it happens in the region in the space.
This is Goldschmidt paper. You can. That's a static answer.
Yeah.
I mean, all the replica symmetric calculation are for static answer.
No, you do the dynamics via the
Okay.
But because this is in the classical.
We should talk.
So were you saying that this, if you do this for the one-body problem, that it's a jump transition from the statistic measure?
No, I was saying for the one-body problem, if you look at the critical value of this RC at the center of the spectrum, or somewhere, you know, halfway towards the ground state, you find the same value of this RC. So this would be just like that.
So in the single particle mobility edge, the critical exponent doesn't change with the single particle. The level statistics measure doesn't change.
It changes from dimension to dimension. This is true. So if you look at the critical statistics in three dimensions, it's different from four dimensions, it's different from five dimensions. And if you do the extra expansion around the two, so it changes by dimension. So in some sense, like changing the energy density here is like changing the dimension.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's nice to think about, as you change the energy density, the connectivity of the hypercube gets curtailed. That's maybe that's a picture that one can. I mean, the connectivity changes, and that changes the dimension, so to say.
Exactly.
Okay, that could be a particular picture. So yeah, so how much time do I have? Let me. 7 minutes. So we have a sort of perturbative understanding of these features in the dynamic phase diagram, and we use something called the forward scattering approximation. So there you start off with an initial state, which is at a particular site on the hypercube, so at site A. So this has some energy EA. And you ask, what's the amplitude to be on site B, which is n steps away? So this is, you have to go up to nth order in perturbation theory, and you have to sum over different paths that can take you to that point, essentially. And these are products over the energy denominators. The matrix element is gamma to the power n, where small n is the number of steps. So, and the criterion for localization that we use is if you have an amplitude up to the n minus 1th step, what is the, if the system with probability 1 in as n goes to capital N, so you take a finite n hypercube, and you ask what is the amplitude of the wave function if you take small n steps in this finite n hypertube? And assuming this stays finite at the n minus 1th step, when you take the next step, does that wave function with probability 1, the amplitude with probability 1, become of order 1? So this is one criterion. I'm not saying this is a general criterion, but this is a criterion which seemed sensible, and this is what we use to sort of say something from the perturbation theory. So, and you can calculate this probability, and you can calculate the number of paths which can lead this n steps, and this probability p is the probability that the wave function can be within some, the energy can be within some window of interval which matches this value of the wave function at n minus 1th step. So we know the probability distribution of the disorder, and one can calculate 1 minus p is the probability that there was no resonance until that step. And if in the limit of small n going to capital N and capital N going to infinity, this probability remains of order, the probability to find the resonance, or the other way around, becomes order 1, then the system remains localized. So, so in the extensive energy case, where this is sort of the microcanonical picture, you have a state which is far from the center of the band with at some extensive energy. This sort of a naive estimate, assuming neglecting all the correlations between the paths up to nth order, as I was saying, all the typical states are in the center of the band. So the dominant part of the perturbation theory is just gamma over epsilon n, which is the energy. At n steps gives you at 2 to the power n, and the number of sort of paths is n factorial. And if you do the sort of algebra as I sort of set up previously, you can get an estimate of this gamma critical as n going to infinity to the leading order estimate is epsilon. So this is what we plotted, what I plotted in the first sort of microcanonical dynamical phase diagram, this straight line. And this is what this perturbation theory at extensive energy is suggesting. This is a very non-rigorous perturbation theory, nothing like the perturbation theory we'll see in the next talk, but this is a rough estimate, yeah. So at the infinite temperature case, you have to be a little careful. Now your state, initial state, is in this middle of the band. And now you will mostly be, you are most likely to be delocalized. So one way, one sort of simple way to get an estimate for the critical value at finite capital N's, finite size of the hypercube, is look for the greediest path. So you have a hypercube, and you ask, if you go to capital N steps away, what is the greediest path that you can construct? So at each step on the hypercube, if you neglect the loops, if you neglect that there are no loops, at each step there are n minus 1 possibilities. Subsequent steps. And you have n, as Subir pointed out, there are n number of states you can hop to. Now, the typical energy of the state after the ith hop can be written down as sort of square root n divided by the ith hop. So this is a product of these numbers. So you have a square root n is the typical value of this energy distribution. And you want to sample it n minus I times. So the idea is that typical value just will get divided by n minus I. And if you take a product and ask where this delocalizes, the finite size estimate that you get for capital is 1 over square root n. So this is a very heuristic argument. We have a slightly more careful argument calculating the probabilities from the original probability distribution, And that essentially gives a log n correction in the denominator in this quantity. So our claim is that in this model, mean field model, there is no infinite temperature MBL state, even though there is a finite phase transition and finite energy densities. So open questions. So this is a model which is nice because it gives us some it throws away a lot of features of a finite dimensional problem, but it still gives us some handle to understand this wave, this statistical properties of these wave functions of the hybrid cube. So maybe this is a tractable mean field model of the transition at finite energy density. It raises sort of an interesting question also. If there is a dynamical transition, which is a freezing transition at finite energy density, and as I said, the localization transition is actually in the paramagnet, is much above the thermodynamic spin glass transition. You could ask, are there physical systems which have this property? Because you see dynamical freezing in experiments, in amorphous materials. Do you really see spin glass? Maybe the dynamical freezing occurs. Are there signatures of MBL in this dynamical freezing above at a higher energy density than the spin glass, the thermodynamic spin glass transition? So that's a very interesting question. Maybe one has to go and reinterpret and do better experiments on already known amorphous spin glass or amorphous materials where this dynamical freezing is observed. And maybe there's something to do with the underlying quantum many-body localization. One never knows. As I said, conservation laws in the presence of a mobility edge has subtle subtleties which I don't think exists in the infinite temperature case. So one has to revisit these ideas of conservation laws with mobility edge. Lack of infinite temperature MBL in long range models, is it a generic feature? You still get finite energy density transitions, but no infinite temperature transitions. That's an interesting question. And then there is this connection with error correcting codes. So the random energy model, the classical random energy model, has this interesting feature that it can be used as a classical error correcting code. So the idea is that you encode your M bits, classical bits in this case, in some string of capital N bits. And then this sort of spin glass transition actually helps to sort of, if you transport this in string of bits now through a sort of a noisy channel, where the noisy channel is could be the bath, the fact that you don't hop to the, you don't thermally, in the classical case, you don't thermally get to the configuration which is Hamming distance, certain fixed Hamming distance away, allows you to correct for the errors that creep into your initial string of bits. Now, in the quantum case, now there's quantum dynamics, and suppose there's no coupling to the bath, can you coherently transfer a quantum state because of many-body localization? With that, I would like to conclude, and these are the conclusions.